following program is brought to you by your friends at Podcast One.
Lowe's knows you'll do spring right by saving on everything you need to get your garden growing. We do it right, too, with incredible deals to help you save during our Spring Black Friday sale, like Bonnie vegetable and herb plants, 4 for $10. And for a clean-looking landscape, pick up 5 bags of Scott's mulch for just $10. Whatever's on your spring to-do list, hurry in and save during our Spring Black Friday sale. Do it right for less. Start with Lowe's. Offers valid through 4/17, not valid on Alaska or Hawaii. Bonnie offer valid on 19-ounce pots. See store for details. U.S. only.
Welcome to the Forbes Under 30 podcast. I'm Steve Goldblum, your host. On this show, we speak with young entrepreneurs and innovators.
Today, we have a statistician on. Her name is Davina Durgana, and she's no ordinary numbers person. She is the senior statistician for the Walk Free Foundation. She also made the Forbes Under 30 in Science. Walk Free is dedicated to fighting modern-day slavery, what's known as human trafficking. Welcome, Davina.
Thank you, Steve. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, tell us first just about Walk Free and what you do for them.
Absolutely. So the Walk Free Foundation is actually a large family foundation that was started by Andrew Forrest, Nicola Forrest, and Grace Forrest in 2012. And we have a multi-pronged approach to trying to eradicate slavery. I'll start with the part that I work most closely with. That's the Global Slavery Index, and I'm one of the report authors for that. And basically, we cover 167 countries around the world where we model vulnerability to slavery. We have surveys through Gallup World Poll in the field in any given year. And this year, we have now a total of 58 countries that we've surveyed on slavery and you know, forced marriage. And we also look at government response by country. So we have a pretty comprehensive database of all of these measures, and we use this as an advocacy tool with governments. So our work is a very unique blend of both academics and policy advocacy. It's a very fascinating place to be.
And can you give us a sense of which countries are the most affected by slavery and human trafficking?
Sure. So one of the interesting things about which countries have like the highest rates of prevalence or which countries are most affected is that in every country in the world, there is slavery and forced marriage. So one of the interesting things is that I think the more vulnerable people that you have in a country, such as India or China, which have very many people in general. So when you have a very large population and if even a small percentage of that population is thought to be enslaved, it ends up being quite a lot of people. So the challenge becomes, how do we understand slavery as a process? How do we understand where developed countries really fit in that paradigm? So one of the interesting things is that developed countries like the United States and many European countries, we actually fuel demand for modern slavery through the consumer choices that we make. So it's fascinating that there are many countries where there are very many vulnerable people and slavery seems to be quite prevalent within their borders. That's like India and China, where you have domestic trafficking occurring in brick kilns in India. You'll have, of course, brothels. So this is both labor and sex trafficking. And then you'll have also opportunities to really look at trafficking from the consumer side. So where are people going to provide this cheap labor? What companies and consumers are really directly benefiting, and often that would come down to culpability of developed countries. So it's quite complicated and really interesting because a lot of times it's easy to say that the most vulnerable countries have the worst trafficking problems, but really those countries will often have problems in part because developed countries fuel the demand for cheaper and cheaper services and goods, including sex.
Talk a little bit about the demand and what the United States' role is in that.
Yeah. So the United States is an interesting example. Originally, a lot of my research was actually creating one of the first vulnerability models for minors of their risk and prevalence of human trafficking in the U.S. So even just looking at prevalence rates within the United States, it's always been amazing to me how many different types of trafficking there are and just how expansive it is. So one of the most interesting things is that we often talk about labor. We always talk about sex trafficking. There's this image, evocative image of young women that are forced to provide sex. And there's been a lot of campaigning and advocacy about how do we think more clearly about young women, runaway and homeless youth, transgendered youth. How do we protect them from the sex industry and men and boys? Mm-hmm. But the problem then becomes that we kind of overlook some of the more complicated questions about labor trafficking. So when we're thinking about exploitative labor and exploited laborers, really, you can see that in almost every industry in the U.S. You can see exploited laborers in the kitchens in some of your favorite restaurants. You can see that in the domestic work that that may be in your house,
right,
or even, you know, cleaning your office building at night. It's really fascinating, and there are not very many clear parameters around when exploited labor really crosses a threshold of being too close to trafficking. So it's a very fascinating problem, because I think in terms of the United States, not only are we fueling a lot of immigration crises right now with some of the politics going on around visa availability and eligibility to work in the United States, we also see that this pushes people to take riskier and riskier methods of getting into certain developed countries. And it's not just the United States. You can see this with Brexit in the United Kingdom and many other European countries. You're really pushing vulnerable people to an even more vulnerable place, and then still expecting the cheap labor and goods that had come with the free-flowing migration of the labor force. So now what we're seeing in the United States is incredibly vulnerable people who could be very much exploited in their places of employment, but would be very, very concerned about coming forward, because they could easily be deported, deported given changes in how this administration is approaching migration.
Sounds like you're sort of preying on a demand and a fear. Can you talk a little bit about the business behind trafficking as a commercial business, and just how profitable it is for criminals?
So one of the most impactful and really troubling components of modern slavery and human trafficking, as compared to many other crimes like sexual assault, domestic violence, is that there is this profit motive. So as a statistician and someone who models this type of behavior and tries to predict where the most vulnerable people will be and what traffickers are doing and thinking, it actually becomes easier for me, because they're always motivated by where they can make the most money and where the profit margin is the largest. So often this brings in lots of issues of crime displacement. So if one part of a state, let's say New York, has a really great task force on human trafficking in Long Island, that may push some of that crime out further into Queens, because it's going to be displaced to a location where that response is not quite as strong. It becomes really challenging, because it requires a more comprehensive and collaborative approach to ending modern slavery, where we don't have really strong and excellent law enforcement and victim service provision responses in one area and then not in another. One of the interesting things is that many people in my field would say that an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, that a lot of our efforts to rehabilitate survivors of trafficking, a lot of the services we provide, often it never really can overcome that type of abuse and trauma. And so protecting the vulnerable populations before they become victims is incredibly important. And I think in terms of how we look at even our own culpability. So I myself tried to have a slave-free wedding in 2013, and it was incredibly difficult, because it was so challenging even in 2013 to source where all of the materials for my wedding dress came from, or for the chocolate in our wedding cake. It was very, very difficult for someone who I would consider myself to be a knowledgeable consumer and a socially conscious consumer to be able to do this in much less than cost-effective way. However, now that governments are passing modern slavery supply chain laws like the United Kingdom, we are seeing more effort being made by companies to make that information available. And I think we can get to the point now where consumers can be more aware of the types of the repercussions of their consumer choices. So we can choose to purchase certain brands of clothing and food, or really any consumer good that is committed to not having slavery in its supply chain. And we can make a significant impact that way.
And we'll be right back after this quick break. The Equifax breach that impacted roughly 143 million consumers just got bigger. They've now added 2.5 million people to that list. If that's not bad enough, Yahoo announced that their 2013 breach impacted all 3 billion user accounts, triple the original estimate. You should know, once your personal information has been exposed, it doesn't just go away. Identity thieves can buy your info on the dark web for months, even years after a breach. They can use it to commit crimes in your name, even steal from your 401k. Now is the time to get protection. Sign up for LifeLock today. No one can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses, but LifeLock can help you see more than if you're just monitoring your credit. Go to LifeLock.com or call 1-800-LIFELOCK. Use promo code Forbes, that's Forbes, for 10% off your LifeLock membership. Visit LifeLock.com and save 10% now.
Well, picking up on consumer choices, I bet people would be blown away if they realized how much we participate daily in this business and in this cycle. So what are some – I love the campaign that you did around your wedding to produce a slave-free wedding. What are ways that listeners to this can even just think of it as a slave-free day?
Yeah, that's a great question, Steve. So there's a great app that came out by Humanity United. It's called Slavery Footprint. And basically, you can download this app and you can go through and indicate which brands and what type of things you use in your typical day. And it'll actually tell you how many slaves, how much you've benefited from slave labor in that one day, given your consumer choices. So again, that's a Slavery Footprint application by Humanity United. It's a smartphone application, and it's a good way to just start being more aware. The other part of it is that there are certain industries right now that have been under attention for quite some time for really having a lot of modern slavery issues. One of those is the cocoa industry in West Africa. Another is the fishing and shrimp industries in Southeast Asia, particularly Thailand. But what's interesting is that there's lots of investigative reporting, lots of public consciousness awareness raising activities around those really amazing pieces of research. And what's happening now is that a lot of those major retailers that are benefiting from those very, very cheap goods are really standing up and saying, you know, we should not be abiding by this. And really what's prompting that is also the passage of supply chain transparency legislation. So aside from looking at the Slavery Footprint application and really thinking about your consumer choices, we can also really be pushing our legislators to pass more supply chain transparency legislation that will essentially bind companies to really be committed to thinking about these issues.
And I think part of the first step is recognizing the problem. So can you just give us a clear definition of slave labor so that we can all identify it?
Absolutely. So the way that the Walk Free Foundation and the United Nations define slavery is aligned with something called the Palermo Protocol. Essentially, if someone is either coerced, forced, or defrauded into providing commercial sex or labor, and those standards don't necessarily apply if there are minors involved, but if you are forced, coerced, or defrauded into providing commercial sex or labor, then for commercial gain, then you are essentially considered a human trafficking or modern slavery victim. Under the umbrella definition of modern slavery, we also include forced marriage, which becomes a very interesting problem to define. So in some of our surveys in Ethiopia and Pakistan, where arranged marriages are quite common, it was very difficult to distinguish for these survey respondents essentially what we meant by forced marriage.
Right.
So we would say, you know, if there's money exchange, if it's a commercial exchange, which is always going to be the hallmark of a human trafficking situation, that there's a commercial or monetary exchange or gain made by another, we would say that that's the standard for forced marriage. And then the issue of dowries and cultural bride payments would come in. So it becomes a very big challenge that's complicit with issues of empowerment and whether people can actually consent. Like, is it true? Can we consider it to be true consent if a woman or man agrees to be married, but the alternative to doing so would be being ostracized from their family and community? So I think the definitions do get a bit hazy, but
right,
to make it simple, any time that we think that an individual is being forced against their will to provide commercial sex or labor services, and there's a profit, there's a commercial element to that, then we would consider that modern slavery.
David, what are some common misconceptions that you run into in your work about slavery and human trafficking?
One of the most common misconceptions in the United States context is that sex trafficking of young women and girls is the most prevalent type of trafficking. It's the most prevalent. People think that labor trafficking doesn't really exist, or that perhaps it's not, you know, as prevalent. The interesting thing becomes that labor trafficking victims often have a very difficult time identifying as victims. So in a lot of our recent survey research, we would ask people, like, why do you think that you're a trafficking victim? Like, what are the situations that, you know, are keeping you from freely leaving this work context? Right. And often the adult males will respond with really egregious examples of abuse as, you know, this is like, as in, I'm being physically abused, my wages are being detained, I'm being held against my will, physically constrained to a location. And then that's the point at which they would identify as a victim. There are very, very many exploited laborers and trafficking victims who are adult men who cannot or do not understand or appreciate their status as a victim because they're in a very vulnerable labor situation where often they may feel lucky to have a job at all. One of the big misconceptions does come down to definitely the prevalence of adult male laborers in trafficking situations and also the context around which they can identify themselves as victims.
And one of the things that I found interesting in researching you is that it's women are used to lure young boys and girls into trafficking. Can you talk a little bit about that?
So one thing I will say about traffickers is that they are resourceful. Whatever they think will make them a more attractive prospect to potential victims, they will use. So that will be, they'll use romantic relationships. They can use women and girls that might make them, other people feel less threatened. Often there's a phenomenon, and it's been a big challenge in the United States. It's called bottom girls. Essentially, these are women who have been abused and exploited by a trafficker for probably often a very long time, and then they begin to take on responsibilities that the trafficker has delegated to them. So in effect, we've had cases in the United States where women have been trafficked by other women who were also trafficked because they identified them as a primary abuser and trafficker in their situation. So it's a very sad and very difficult thing. And you know, even for the traffickers, the limited research that's been done on them indicates that there are often high rates of sexual abuse, different types of psychological abuse, like things that contribute to people that would use others in this type of way. I do think traffickers in general are becoming, not only are they emboldened by governments and countries that don't have strong anti-trafficking laws and procedures. For example, the United States has great laws on the books, but it becomes very difficult to prosecute many of these crimes given the need for victim testimony and a lot of our own internal biases in the United States judicial system against sexual assault survivors and other types of abuse. So what ends up happening is that in many countries around the world, there are so many vulnerable people that often traffickers don't even really need to recruit or spend so much effort recruiting potential victims. There are many people who are out there thinking that they are willing to take very risky routes to gainful employment because that's the best opportunity they have. And I think that's one of the biggest dangers we face.
And we'll be right back after this quick break. The Forbes Under 30 podcast is brought to you by LifeLock. Equifax recently announced a breach of 143 million identities, and it's a good idea to take steps to get protection. Be among the millions who trust our identity theft protection to LifeLock. Go to LifeLock.com. Use promo code Forbes for 10% off.
There are 120,000 unsolved murder cases in America.
It was the next day that I found out from my parents what had happened, that my sister was killed.
Each one is called a cold case.
Sometimes you have to look really closely to find the evidence.
Damn it, I killed her.
Damn it, I killed her.
Cold Case Files, the podcast.
Garcia is walking into the home of a real monster.
I was nervous. I realized what kind of person I was dealing with.
It's a goosebump moment.
Download new episodes every Tuesday on the Podcast One app or subscribe at Apple Podcasts or PodcastOne.com.
Lowe's knows you'll do spring right by saving on everything you need to get your garden growing. We do it right, too, with incredible deals to help you save during our Spring Black Friday sale, like Bonnie vegetable and herb plants, 4 for $10. And for a clean-looking landscape, pick up 5 bags of Scott's Mulch for just $10. Whatever's on your spring to-do list, hurry in and save during our Spring Black Friday sale. Do it right for less. Start with Lowe's. Offers valid through 4/17, not valid in Alaska or Hawaii. Bonnie offer valid on 19-ounce pots. See store for details. U.S. only.
You live, as you've said, at the intersection of math and slavery.
And I know with your work that you forecast a lot of the human trafficking here in the U.S. So what can you tell us about how your work is making an impact and combating human trafficking in the States?
One of the main tenets of my work is actually really disaggregating that concept of vulnerability. And I look at something called the Human Security Framework. It's a framework that was developed by the United Nations. And essentially, we look at seven areas of vulnerability, including health, political, community, personal, food, economic, and environmental insecurity. And by looking at all these different types of insecurity and trying to assess within those types of insecurity, what types of drivers are most important for certain victim populations, we're actually seeing an interesting trend. So in the United States, at least in my initial study in 2014, we were looking at actually what are the differences in risk of U.S. citizen minors and foreign national minors. And it was fascinating. Of course, political insecurity was a huge problem for foreign national minors, which we expected. But before economic insecurity, there were issues around community insecurity. And one of the interesting things about community insecurity is that there have been so many books written since the early 1990s, like Robert Putnam has been writing about the decline of civil society in America in his book Bowling Alone. I volunteer as a firefighter and EMT and with Big Brothers Big Sisters, and I'm a sex trafficking specialist with National Court Appointed Special Advocates. And for all of those organizations, which are almost entirely staffed by volunteers, American civil society, essentially, you are seeing declines in a lot of our recruitment numbers. And what's really interesting is to find that community insecurity ends up being a major driver for all types of minors in the United States to human trafficking really indicates that there's something about civil society development in the U.S. that we really need to reinvest in. So often with my in my capacity as a volunteer firefighter and EMT and with a lot of these groups, I really emphasize the importance of what we do, because I think minors have less opportunity to be protected by the other adults and caring individuals in their communities than we realize. I think we assume that we're more connected to our neighbors if we'd say hi to them once a week or wave to them at the bus stop. But I think there's probably a lot more we can do to be more engaged and to really treat the protection of children as a collective responsibility within our own communities, even at a local level.
You're saying without these civic organizations, otherwise it can collapse.
Yeah, I think there's a big problem. So I think that ever since, you know, the Great Recession, public funding for a lot of social service services and social safety nets has declined. And when social safety nets decline from, you know, government provision or public provision, we need to compensate for that somewhere. And I think the problem becomes if we don't, or if we assume or forget how important those community relationships and that community investment is. So I never really thought of my volunteer activities as anything more than extracurricular or recreational until I completed that study that showed that community insecurity was a huge driver for minors to be vulnerable to modern slavery and human trafficking. And it really reinvigorated how I perceived my role in those organizations and how we even talk about civil society in the U.S. and the importance of us reconnecting as a society in a lot of ways.
Well, let's take just a step back and learn a little more about you. What I know, just in researching you, that you went on a mission trip to El Salvador. And I just want to know, what made you do that and what did you see?
Yeah, that El Salvador trip was really traumatic. So it was in 2006, and I was working with an organization called APRODANI, a human rights organization for children in El Salvador. We had a really great time. It was super hot, lots of bug bites, all the normal, you know, challenges that come from living in El Salvador. But one of the interesting things was that they had just recovered at that time and are still recovering from their civil war in the 1980s. As a result, there's still a certain degree of lawlessness. And when that power vacuum was introduced, MS-13 really took over. And so cartel-type groups and criminal organizations really have more power and influence than a lot of legitimate law enforcement. We knew all of this going in. Like, we were very well prepared about the country. We understood what was happening. And as we were engaging with the children, we fell in love with them. So it was easy to forget the context within which they lived. Until right before we were set to leave, we actually had to go to the funeral for a young girl of that same community. She was the cousin of one of the little girls I taught in my classes, and she had actually been found killed by MS-13. There are these groups, these criminal groups that actually are stronger than governments in lots of places around the world. They're just trying to fuel and fund their own activities. And it really upset me. So coming back to the U.S.,
yeah.
I basically worked with every group I could find on trafficking, realized how bad it was in the U.S. And then interestingly enough, following my PhD work on the domestic modeling for modern slavery, I'm now a report author on this global slavery index, so I look at it everywhere.
What do you think you'd be doing if you hadn't made that trip?
Well, it's really hard to say. I think I always wanted to be president of the United States, so I think...
There's still time. This is the 30 under 30 podcast. There's still loads of time.
Oh, goodness. Well, I think I would run for public office, and I do wonder, even now, given how important public leadership has been in modern slavery, I would still love to run for public office.
Right. And you really do love statistical analysis.
I do love statistical analysis.
Let's just get it out of the open. which is great. There's a quote from you that I really liked. You said, unlike sexual abuse, which is done for personal gratification, traffickers are usually working for commercial aims, which means that we have concrete motivations and illicit economic driving factors to measure and model. I feel like a great summary of the problem. What is it that you'd like listeners to take away from this conversation, your work, and what can they do?
Well, one thing I'd want listeners to take away is that it does happen everywhere. So it happens in the United States. And one thing I do want to say about the misconceptions is that in the U.S., you might be interested to know that every type of slavery I've seen anywhere else in the world happens here. And in my opinion, that even includes child soldiers, which I would equate to being very similar to the youth gangs in, for example, Southside Chicago. So it's not something that we can avoid. It's something that's in our backyards, and it's something that happens to the most vulnerable people everywhere in the world. So please don't let anyone convince you otherwise. And also start thinking about the consumer choices you're making, because that's one of the most powerful ways you can impact how people continue to abuse others and to not allow them to do it on our behalf.
Well, you know, it's interesting when you talk about how widespread, you know, this epidemic. It is an epidemic. What well-known companies are standing up against slave labor, and which ones are not, and what can be done about it?
Sure. So there are actually some great examples of companies that are standing up against slave labor. One of which is Walmart. They after the Guardian released some of the investigative reporting on the slavery in the shrimp and shellfish that they were receiving from Southeast Asia, they've actually really taken a leadership role in this space and started to look very seriously at supply chain transparency. There are lots of other organizations that have units that are committed to this. Microsoft, Google, a lot of people are really working well on this. In terms of the ones that are not doing so well, so the interesting thing is that as we try to engage with business partners, our idea really isn't to try to name and shame them, because at this point, almost every multinational company will at some point have slavery in their supply chain, even if it's being hidden from them, from intermediary or third
right.
party providers. In terms of industries that are super high risk, though, almost all chocolate is essentially thought to be derived from the west coast of Africa, where there are incredibly exploitative labor conditions for the cocoa crop. And in saying that, essentially, I could tell you that when I was looking at the slave-free wedding, one concern is that unless something right now is free trade, it's unlikely that the chocolate you're consuming from major producers is not slave implicit, that there's no connection to slavery. So a lot of the companies are working on that, but it is interesting that in some industries, slave labor and exploited labor and exploitative labor practices is so widespread that it's almost impossible for some companies to get away from it. And then also to think about buying local, like where you know that the supply chain and the sourcing of those materials is more transparent.
Well, listen, obviously the elephant in the room, the question on everybody's mind, what dessert did you end up going with at the wedding?
Well, we We actually ended up going with an Indian dessert. We had an Indian and a Christian wedding. And for the Indian wedding, I wonder if this counts as exploited labor sometimes, but my grandmother and her friends ended up making a bunch of ethnic Indian treats.
Oh, great. Closely monitored.
which is almost
And now I know that you're a Google fellow. For people like myself who have no idea what that entails, what is a Google fellow? What do you do?
Sure. Well, so that was for something. One of the very fascinating things that I've been impressed about has been Google's leadership in a lot of these social responsibility causes. And one of the things, as the Google Fellow for the Personal Democracy Forum in technology and social change, was they really invested in bringing women together, particularly women leaders in technology and social issues. And at one of the highlights of that position was that they actually sent us to the Personal Democracy Forum, I believe it was in 2016, in New York City. And we all got to sit together with executives from Google and just talk about some of the ways that we were all using technology to fight social issues. And it was fascinating to be brought together, especially to meet other women in these positions. As you know, that's not super common, women in statistics and math, but also just women in tech. It's lovely to see that community growing. And I think I really am grateful to Google for their role in trying to bring a lot of us together.
All right. Well, Davina, you're doing great work. I'm glad people know more about it. And I want to thank you for taking the time to talk with us.
Oh, thanks, Damon. Pleasure's been mine.
That's it for this episode of Forbes Under 30. I hope you enjoyed it. If you want to reach out to us with a comment or question, please do so at under 30. That's the number 30 at podcastone.com.
What's happening, guys? This is Chael Sonnen, America's favorite gangster. Make sure you check out my show, You're Welcome, right here at Podcast One. I've got guests like Stone Cold Steve Austin, Dana White, Arnold Schwarzenegger, and upcoming Brad Pitt and Will Smith are going to be in studio to talk about upcoming projects. Go, listen, enjoy, check it out. And don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. Send a pigeon, send a fax, write it on a postage stamp. Just make sure you are listening to Your Welcome at Podcast One, or download and listen on the Podcast One app.
Lowe's knows you'll do spring right by saving on what you need to get your garden growing. We do it right, too, with incredible deals during our Spring Black Friday sale, like 19-ounce Bonnie vegetable and herb plants, 4 for $10. And pick up 5 bags of Scott's Mulch in store only for just $10. Whatever's on your list, hurry in and save during our Spring Black Friday sale. Do it right for less. Start with Lowe's. Offers valid through 4/17 while supplies last. Not valid in Alaska or Hawaii. Scott's offer valid in store only. See store for details. U.S. only.
At the border, I'm Ed Donahue with an AP News Minute. At the roundtable discussion today in San Antonio, Texas, President Trump heard something he said he never heard before about life along the border.
Many people are dying. And the danger of living here, unless you know exactly what you're doing, is tremendous.
This is Texas Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick.
Where are the people in Washington to stand up for these children, these women, these senior citizens? Where are they? Bring them down. Mr. President, let the Democrats come down to Brooks County. Let them come to any of these ranches. Let them see these bodies. Let them see the skeletons. We have the photographs.
Attorney General William Barr says he thinks spying did occur on Donald Trump's presidential campaign, suggesting the origins of the Russia investigation may have been mishandled. Scientists released the first image ever made of a black hole, revealing a fiery ring of gravity-twisted light swirling around the edge of the abyss. One scientist said science fiction has become science fact. I'm Ed Donahue.